It's that time of year again, the great and the good of media and marketing. Last week descended on the Hilton for the annual Umbrella 360 conference. The big hitters came out of bat. Simon McDowell introduced Coles to One Direction, David Gingell on 9, Melissa Barnes on Twitter, and Hamish McLennan on 10. The debates were had on the state of the media, but also Q&A for the industry, and emerging ideas and trends were discussed, including our very own session from PhD on gamification. This is all the reports, debate, and dilemmas from this year's collective trip to Umbrella Land. This is the PhD Cast. Joining me on the PhD Cast this week is podcast regular Stuart Gurney.
Hello!
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Very good, thanks. I can't even fellows only last week. And also joining us for the first time is Marcus Lewis.
Hello, for the first time.
And Martin Hadley.
This is my inaugural visit as well.
So very good to have you both here. Are you excited about joining us for the PhD Cast?
I am, and I was very excited about the Umbrella 360. I thought it was a really good get-together, so happy to have a chat about that today.
Very cool.
I'm very pleased to be here. We've got a face for radio, so this is perfect.
Very good. Right, let's get straight into it. It was two jam-packed days. What for everyone were the main or biggest, the most important? I mean, perhaps first of all, what is Umbrella 360? For those people who don't know, what is Umbrella 360?
I guess it's a collaboration of different marketing, media, advertising thoughts, big ideas, discussion points, opportunity for everyone to get together and debate some of the key themes that are happening in the industry.
Mm. I'm going to get a little bit deeper than that and say one of the things that we were talking about actually at the event was how far Umbrella as an organisation, as a brand, has come. And to me, that really typifies what Umbrella is about. So in the old days, we had a couple of trade journals and we had some financial press, and they pretty much dominated things for years and years, all going back to when I first started in media. And now you have Umbrella, which is this new force. And the reason why it's so successful, I think, is because it has embraced the type of technology that it covers in the 360. So it became a forum for the industry. It became a way for the industry to connect. And it's now, with this event, the focal point for the entire industry. And as you said, not just for media and advertising, but across all the communication disciplines.
I mean, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, it could be argued that this has become the fulcrum, the crucible, really, for the entire industry once a year. It's become the de facto industry conference, really, hasn't it?
Definitely. And outside of probably ADMA, which I think is bringing a new light to the industry in terms of data-led media and communications. Other than that, and awards, Umbrella 360, I have to say, is it.
So what first were the main sessions? What were the biggest and best and most valuable sessions that everyone took out of the 2 days?
Well, being ruthlessly efficient and analytical, I really stuck to the key ones for me. So for me, it was the sessions around big data, or data, depending on where you come from. The analytics session on day two, so I find they were pretty useful. It was good to see Umbrella. That was the first time I'd ever been there. I just couldn't believe the size of it, to be fair.
And that was before we got on to data, because I'm a next generation watcher, therefore I go with that. But before we get to the actual data sessions, I mean, what was your take on Umbrella as a first time visitor?
I was there for probably about half a day in the end. I was pretty pleasantly surprised by just the depth of the breadth, really, of the discussions and what was going on. And really, there was just people from every walk of life, from marketing and advertising, and it was just good to see everybody in the same room.
And so this year, a few sessions on data. You went to one of them. What was your take on them? What was the main tone of the debate? What were they talking about? What was the thrust of it?
I think with the sessions that I went to, certainly there was seemed to be, as usual, the buzzword of big data, or buzzwords of big data. it was something that has really been going for 3 years, and I don't think anyone's really got a handle on it. So, I mean, I think I found the sessions reasonably useful, but there seems to be a huge amount of confusion. People talk about it a lot, but, you know, essentially at the end of the day, it's about segmentation and how useful that data was. And what I didn't feel really came across in those sessions, that really as marketeers and media people, we should be focusing on the big wins first. So one of the quotes that somebody mentioned, I can't remember the gentleman in question, was that $270 billion worldwide is lost through bad data use. But I think I'm really addressed that, you know, there are big wins within that first, and what is the curve, what is the cost-benefit curve, you know, where do you start, where do you stop? And realistically, it should be about concentrating on the three or four things that are going to make a difference, not the 99th or the 100th that isn't realistically.
And any other perspectives on data from I mean, I was in another session, and the same one that you referred to when the gentleman, I think it's from Quantium, the MD or the CEO from Quantium, talked about the $270 billion problem. He referred back to the old Laffley quote, which is, I know that half my advertising money's working, I just don't know which half. He says, that's now gone, we're done, we know exactly what's working. But there's still a $270 billion gap in that knowledge and understanding. But I mean, for me, that this is really typical, I think, of a lot of the debates, and that there is healthy, vigorous, awesome, brilliant debate. I guess it's a responsibility of the people there to then take the implications and then act on what needs to be done as a result of these debates, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think from what I took out of it was probably I need to go involved next year, and I think the people, the analytics guys at all the agencies and the marketing companies need to get a bit more involved in that level of it. I mean, we have got ADMA for a level of that forum, but I think it needs to have a bigger place at Umbrella next year, and the people who are doing that day to day need to lead the charge and not just sit back and watch. And you know, I'll put my hands up, and I think, yeah, there's a few more people who should get more involved.
Brilliant. So a data charge next year. Stu, what were the main highlights for you?
Quite different take on the conference versus Marcus. So I did go to that big data one, and I think actually I agree, and I think it's not just a data one. There was a general kind of feeling of I know all this already, and I think everyone in the room knew it. So for me it was like, what are we doing here? We're just raising the issues. There's no solutions to solving the issues, or there's no follow through for stuff. So it felt like the role from Umbrella was very much to kind of bring him to the fore, and then for me, that I still had questions around everything around, and now what's the best practice, what's the best way of doing these type of things, and making everything a bit more tangible. In terms of the sessions that I went to quite a lot of client-based ones, because I wanted to understand, obviously there's a from our session last year we curated around the lack of bravery in the market, just to see for those clients who had done brave and interesting things how they got to that place. So I went to see the Joyville stuff from Cadbury's, Qantas rebranding and those kind of things. I was actually quite underwhelmed, unsurprisingly, everyone who listens to the podcast, you know, I'm very cynical. But I definitely felt underwhelmed, and it felt like all these brilliant instances of great ideas in this market have come from circumstance versus actually genuinely really interesting ideas. So it's almost like got an interesting client, got an okay idea, and it's been implemented. So there wasn't enough around the process or the best way to practice in terms of turning that into really tangible, workable examples, how we can do that in different circumstances.
And why is that? Is that because these great examples and case studies happen because of luck and serendipity, or is it because they can't tell you how they did it? Is it because they don't want to? Or is it because actually these things genuinely can't often be locked into a process? Often just great ideas just happen.
It felt a lot, I mean, my interpretation was that it was luck. So as I said, just having a great brand manager, an okay idea, and circumstance, i.e. the political situation or the global context that allows you just to bring that idea to life. I didn't get enough of a feel for genuine innovation and genuine interest in those kind of ideas. It just was like, came across this, it was quite interesting, and we were allowed to do it.
Cool.
That's kind of my take on it. I do think
you make your own look, though. So I think, generally, can we argue that the clients and agencies that are braver around their decision making get a disproportionate share of good luck.
I think they might do, yeah.
I think we probably could argue that.
And then the other bit for me was just, there was a lot of conversations around, I mean, the key themes across the whole conference were things like content. If I had a dollar for every time someone said content, I'd be a very rich person. Big data, relationship. And I think, for me, I came out of the 2 days going, I really hope that we don't believe our rhetoric too much. So there's a lot of how do we use content, and there's a lot of conversations, but once again, there's no follow through, no real understanding as to of taking those issues and making them tangible.
Yeah, I want to come back to this idea of the theory, the gap, or I think it's the gap between the theory and the debate and the actual practice. I want to come back to that. Mm. But before that, Marty, what were the main trends or topics or themes or any particular sessions that stood out for you?
Sure. Just my view on the gap between, just to touch on that, the gap between sort of practical application and knowledge sharing in that environment is that I think that there should be sessions that were run as they were, which is to bring up issues, to flesh out issues and to start debate. But I think that they would benefit from having a couple of masterclasses or practical workshops, either as part of this or some adjunct to it, that give you practical knowledge about how to apply that. And that you can, for example, as you said, Stu, you don't really get under the skin of these case studies. You don't know the background behind them. But if you had the person who was responsible for that in a two-hour workshop, you could really interrogate that and start to get information. Obviously, commercial insensitive nature of it as well. Just on that other question about the two things that really stood out for me, two sessions that I went to, one was State of the Media, which was on the back of a survey conducted across the clients' agencies and media agencies as well, and that had quite an extensive panel. Darren Woolley and Denise Revelle from Mediascope are sort of chairing that.
And that's Darren from Trinity.
From
yeah.
Trinity
yeah.
Q3. Our own Toby Hack was part of that, and we had a couple of clients. We had Linda Pallone from Blackmores and Rob Dingwall from Kellogg's, and then a couple other people from other media agencies.
Yeah, I think Chris Malt, who's from TMS, and then also Tony Kendall
and
from Bauer and Zach Zamos as well.
Yes, correct.
Winner of the best name at the
yeah, and I noticed on your blog you referred to him as ZZ. Or
yeah, ZZ.
Yeah. So I thought that was really good. I mean, I don't think it really unearthed anything sort of practical, but for me, the big issue that came out was a disconnectedness between clients, agencies, and the media. I think it was Darren who pretty much said that whoever controls the gold controls. What's the actual quote?
Yeah, Darren Woolley's golden rule is the man with the gold makes the rules.
Makes the rules. Thank you. And in that case, and I think I sort of tend to agree, is that the marketeer is the one who's really driving the relationship, because the marketeer, in my view, is the one who's appointed all these disparate agencies. In this unbundled world, you could have seven or eight communication partners. But really, the glue that binds those is the marketeer. And it was interesting that it really came back to a strong sort of consensus around the brief. If you get a really good brief from the marketeer, then you'll get better input and collaboration between the other agencies.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to briefing, and it comes down to remuneration as well, though. I thought it was a brilliant session. And it was, in many ways, I think, it was a bit of a baton that I think PhD probably ran for the last couple of years. So at Mumbrella One, we wrote a media manifesto with the industry. At Mumbrella last year, we said, if you could change one thing, what would you change? Bravery was a bit in there. And I really feel of all the sessions, Darren and Denise picking this one up and looking at it and analysing the state of the media was very much a baton. So I think this is probably a session that was probably close to PhD's heart, and on with the rules and making gold. I thought it was fascinatingly honest. What Rob Dingwall said in response to that, he was quite refreshingly honest. He said, "Ideas may not be paid for, but they're valued," and that for me was an incredibly honest state on actually where we are. That ideas are valued, but they're not being paid for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he talked about the assembly line approach, which is the sort of old approach with Kellogg's. We'd brief JWT. JWT would come up with a TV commercial. They'd brief the media department. Media department would talk to the media and put it to air. So obviously it's a very sort of 1990s approach to that, and that this approach now is a much more collaborative, faster to market, but how is each party remunerated as part of that? And it ladders back to what you said about who pays for the ideas. And I thought it was quite refreshing from Kellogg's as well to say, well, look, you know, for media agencies, for example, is that you're buying the media and you're making remuneration out of that, but the actual ideas at the front end of that, you may not be directly remunerated for.
Yeah. And I think that what's interesting for me in that session is that one of the key things came out was around collaboration. So all the marketers wanting greater collaboration with agencies and greater working practices. But that, for me, fundamentally comes down from remuneration. We can't afford to have that level of collaboration because we're increasingly giving away our ideas for free and giving away our IP for free. So it felt like there's this really interesting disconnect from the marketers where they want this thing and this idea of collaboration from these agencies, but actually not willing to pay for the time, the resource, and the ability for us to be able to do that, really. So there's a really interesting challenge in that.
But Darren Woolley brought up the point, the work that he's done and surveys across his client base in terms of pitch management, that the average A&P budget allocation to ideas was 0.9%.
Yeah.
So your 91.9% of your A&P budget is spent on implementation.
Yeah.
And you know, we see that from the media agency side of things as well, is that, you know, the vast bulk of the conversations that we have with our clients, you know, unfortunately, are around the implementation. And really what we're trying to do is push the conversation more upstream around the ideas, the strategy, and that the implementation would flow from that, that, you know, in terms of exit from our perspective, executing flawlessly those great strategic ideas and taking
it. Yeah, it's interesting to say, because actually my perspective would be different from that, because I think we probably had about 60-40% conversation around implementation, 40% strategy, but that 40% manifests into actual 0.3% of actual stuff happening.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got this long tail of us having strategic conversations that never manifest and never turn into anything tangible, where that big 60% actually all happens.
Yeah.
So that for me is the real disconnect.
And that's probably what we experience here at PhD is probably a microcosm of what's going on in the whole industry, I'd argue, in that regard. I don't think we're unusual in that regard.
No, absolutely.
I think Darren Woolley also brought up the fact of, you know, the role of procurement is actually on the increase. So if we thought that we're sort of, you know, through weathered the storm of that, it's actually not the case. But on a global perspective, we're, you know, depending on your perspective, we're way behind in terms of the involvement of procurement into the pitch process especially.
Cool, so a podcast procurement special coming in a few weeks' time.
Stay tuned, everyone. That would be amazing.
We'll get some of them in. What are some of the big hitters? We heard from David Gingell from Nine and Hamish McLaren from Ten, two very different people with two very different stories to tell. And I thought what was fascinating on those were actually two very different people and how similar they seem to go about this, how similar there is, that there are these approaches. I mean, the 10 story couldn't be more different from 9 in the last 12 months. But how these two leaders are going about shaping those organisations, I thought was fascinating. I thought that Hamish in particular, talking about a shift towards an older demographic, a shift towards live, moving away from digital channels, moving away from the idea of revenue generation from subscription, actually marks, I mean, and it's a valid strategy, but for me, that's nothing less than a retreat from actually the direction of travel that a lot of the broader media landscape is going in. And he made the point, I mean Feedway marks, I think it's a 2.8 billion after the next one. It's a massive chunk of money. He wants a fair share of it.
Yeah. I think that sort of led us back to where Channel 10 and the 10 Network has come from. So, you know, I think their strategy was completely flawed in that they had deliberately, they were the first to launch a digital channel in terms of one. They failed to monetize that for a long period of time. And then, in addition to that, they wanted to stay the young channel and capitalise on those digital channels. But unfortunately, that's the area that's been hardest hit through, you know, IPTV, Apple TV, and YouTube, and, you know, whatever online sources you can get. So it's very difficult for them to monetise an area that is becoming increasingly not paid for content and not broadcast content. So I think that they've got really no choice but to try and compete on a fairer basis with 7 and 9, just really to become more like them.
Yeah, our very own Mark Code, who's Chief Executive PhD, he asked about 10's digital strategy. He asked, you know, given the NBN, which is the National Broadband Network rollout, but not loads was forthcoming. Actually, it was a second person asking a similar question, which prompted McClelland to say that he did see post-NBN as what he called a big opportunity. But interestingly, the place he went to in terms of capitalising on that opportunity was in subscription and subscription channels, which is perhaps evidence of some of his media background from some of his previous employers, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, so I saw the big data session that Rebecca Horn, the newly appointed Chief Digital Officer of 10, and what was encouraging in that context was her definite passion to try and get under the skin of big data and embrace some of the digital elements that slightly move away from a bit more old school thinking. I mean, I would say once again that session wasn't particularly full of depth, but what it was great at just kind of giving an insight as to where their heads were at and where businesses were going. So we had Fairfax Media there as well, just thinking about and understanding how data was driving not only the commercial agenda but also the consumer experience, which I think was quite encouraging.
One of the other sessions that I was really interested in was it was called Storytelling in a Multi-Screen World, and for me the greatest contributor to that was John Heinesen, I hope I pronounced his name correctly. He's the CEO of a company called Bunnygraph Entertainment, and he's been in for 20 something years in broadcast and programming in the US, and his company now is obviously in the branded content area across multiple screens, as the name would suggest the session. But his big claim to fame at the moment is that he runs all of the multi-screen delivery of content for the Oscars, which is that's a massive global property now. It's moved from sort of a domestic national event into one of the largest global properties, and probably bigger than Super Bowl. He was joined by Craig Blair, who's the new CEO of ZBox, and Mark Fantasy from Shine. And I thought the three of them, I thought that was a really good combination of participants on that panel, because they all take a very different angle. Craig Blair, in terms of ZBox, more on delivery and sort of lower cost to option. How do you make, how do you access the second screen for brand advertisers? Mark Fantasy from Shine, really about how do you create these products from the ground up? And John Heinesen sort of bridging the gap between both of them. But the big thing for me was, they all agreed that we're coming into a golden era of content creation, and that, you know, whilst people in the broadcast area have something to be fearful of, we as an industry, they were very optimistic about the industry and the way it's going. I felt quite buoyed coming out of that session.
And what do we think, this idea of a golden age of brands embracing content and in many ways, ultimately, this is about brands becoming media owners in their own right. You've only got to look at something like Red Bull or GoPro. There are really tangible examples emerging of brands that are becoming media owners in their own right. What are the implications for agencies? What are the implications for us in all this, and for the clients that we work with?
I think for me, actually, the whole umbrella experience, and as I mentioned before, there was a lot of mentions of the word content, and I was starting to get increasingly annoyed by what that meant.
Why are we getting annoyed? Why
because it's so bloody vague. Like,
yeah,
you can use content as a fill gap for I don't really know what I'm talking about, so it must be content solution. And that, for me, kind of typifies the challenge for agencies.
I mean, arguably, an advertising agency creative director from 1988 could walk into a room and say, I'm in the content business.
Absolutely.
They just happen to be 30 seconds long.
Completely.
And broadcast.
And that's why I actually wrote that in my book. An ad is still content. We're still doing the same thing. It just feels like that's a short-term confusion that it's obviously a lot of clients are facing. They don't really know how to kind of work their way through the melee of content, and they're increasingly looking to different agencies to work out what's right for them, what's going to deliver against their business objectives. And for me, that's what the role of agencies going forward will have to work out. But let's just take a step back and really work out what this big question around content means. I don't necessarily think that it's all about doing ad-funded programs and doing product placement at all. I think there's an interesting quote, I think it's from Wieden and Kennedy, where it talks about it's not necessarily scarcity that we're facing, it's apathy. And I think that apathy from a consumer point of view still going to exist. So putting a product in behind the scenes in the foreground of neighbours is still not going to drive that apathy. So for me, it's about less about content and how do we put ideas back into that, into the, to the community housing space.
Yeah, ideas on one hand and possibly data on the other, because like certainly some of the success that PhD's seen over the last year or so in using content has been in and around the capacity to data generate off the back of that and then leverage and use that data. I'm thinking of the work we've done with Air New Zealand specifically on that. Marcus, presumably content purely from the angle of in using it to generate data and then surface insights from that data is a huge opportunity, right?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, again, if it's got to be the right data, obviously, it's got to be, you know, and the right content to enable that. I think the Air New Zealand campaign you're referring to was pretty good at that. It gave us some great insights and it gave us some good understanding of how people were not just obviously purchasing, but how they were interacting with the brand as well, and how we could take that going forward. It's just that understanding and putting the right thing in front of each other, putting the right thing in front of people. I think what Stuart says is pretty spot on. You know, everybody's got content, but it's got to be the right content that actually challenges and interacts with people, not just wallpaper. And let's be fair, 90% of the stuff we see is wallpaper.
Mm. It's interesting because I think everyone pretty much agreed that the current approach to ad-funded content, as you said, Stu, is fundamentally flawed. And I think, you know, the quote of it was that, you know, everyone is disappointed with it, including the clients themselves, who may be measuring at the effectiveness of that campaign and the size of their logo.
Yeah.
But certainly, what was interesting for me is that Shine, and they did tip their hat to Fremantle as well, which is sort of, you know, probably in a similar space, have a whole integration team. You know, so Shine has 11 people that look at the ways to integrate and take these particular properties and monetize those across multiple touch points, whether that be, you know, for example, with The Biggest Loser turning the Golden Door health retreat into a Biggest Loser resort. And then it opened up a whole raft of issues for me, which was, who owns the rights for these? So, you know, Nine Network has one person operating on integration, Shine has 11, and Fremantle has a team of a similar size. So we as agencies, are we geared up, are we resourced, and do we have the foresight to be getting into this space? And if so, we need to start to forward invest quite heavily, I think.
And also, which goes neatly back into the state of the media conversation around collaboration, we don't have the resource and the remuneration to be able to do that, and we don't have the time to do that, so these projects tend to require 6 months, a year out, and we're not given the foresight to be able to do things like that,
but we can rest and relax and acknowledge that those ideas and collaboration are valued.
Yeah,
even if they're not necessarily paid for. The time is against us. Really quickly, what we've talked about all the theory and the debate. The challenge is perhaps action. What are you? Whose responsibility do we think it is for collectively taking these really healthy and awesome debates and umbrella and making action happen?
Well, I think from an agency perspective is that, you know, without sounding too salesy, I think PhD is in a very good space because, you know, I think we're at the forefront of acknowledging and identifying these trends and shifts in the market, and that, you know, as part of the Omnicom Media Group is that we have the capability to invest in this capability. So, you know, having specialists with rich experience and good runs on the board, working in collaboration with a strategic agency and a like-minded client, I think we open up the opportunities and to your earlier point, we create our own luck and we take this stuff to market, we test and adjust and we get some runs on the board and make some money for our clients.
And I guess from my point of view, we've talked a lot about kind of marketeers actually holding more of the cards than they sometimes let off. But actually, for me, there is a definite shift where marketing organisations and advertisers have to take a bit of responsibility for paying for what they require from us. And that, for me, is a big, big change. Who drives that change is still a massive, massive debate. I mean, there's obviously things we can do as an industry, but there's always got to be a point where we can only do so much. So the MFA can only kind of rally a certain amount, and we're going to have to... That's got to come from top down at some point.
And that's that. That was Umbrella 360 for this year. Next week, we're talking TV with big hitters like The MasterChef, The Voice and The Block. How's performance doing and what is the state of TV? We'll see you then. And also a quick hello to Nicola, who's not with us this week. She's in Fiji.
Hi, Nicola.
So hi, Nicola. Hope you're having fun. And happy birthday, Vicky Connerty.
Thank you.
That was the PhD.
And Rob.
That was the PhD cast.